Hi everyone, Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to Top of the Morning on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. For today, we are going to continue with our series of POTUS 47 conversations. And once again, for the conversation, glad to be joined today by both Shane Lieberman, Senior Governmental Affairs Advisor with Governmental Affairs U.S., as well as Kurt Ryman, Head of Fixed Income Americas from the UBS Chief Investment Office. And for you, our listeners, as always, I do like to point out that the UBS Chief Investment Office updates the UBS.com/POTUS47 website on a regular basis with POTUS 47 related updates. This includes the recent update, Supreme Court rules IEEPA tariffs illegal, which was authored on February 20th. We, of course, will spend some time on that topic today, though. Shane, Kurt, it's great to be with you both. And with that, a lot to cover, so let's dive right into it. Shane, on February 20th, the Supreme Court indeed ruled that President Trump overstepped his powers when he imposed global tariffs in 2025 using IEEPA. So a lot of questions come out of that, including what comes next now for U.S. tariff policy, whether the tariff funds will ultimately have to be refunded, as well as the potential impacts to the economy. So I know there's a lot there, but very curious to hear your thoughts coming out of Friday.
Yeah, thanks, Dan. It's good to be with you again. And I think for, you know, this monumental Supreme Court decision, there are a number of knowns and a number of unknowns. You know, for the knowns, we know that, you know, these tariffs have been deemed illegal. And we also know that the Trump administration is going to pivot and is already in motion to put in place and utilize Section 122 tariffs, which is a kind of an emergency 5-month patch, we'll say, until they probably work on other tariff authorities that they've been using not only this past year, but also in the first Trump administration. So the 122, though, it's limited to 5 months. Congress could authorize it to be beyond that 5 months. But the reality is that Congress probably will not agree to that. So we should view this as a 5-month tariff. And it has a maximum amount of 15% that is allowed under its statutory authority. So President Trump has already said he will pursue that maximum of 15%. So the known there, though, is that he can't increase it any further. So from that, I think over the next 5 months, you'll see a number of declarations from the Trump administration about how they plan to move forward with Section 232 and Section 301 tariff authorities. And so that'll be an interesting kind of twists and turns still to come on the tariff front. As for what is an unknown, it's unknown how this money what will happen to it. Will it be refunded to companies? Will it be refunded to Americans? You're seeing kind of an open debate about that now if you turn on the news between lawmakers. Treasury Secretary Bessent yesterday indicated that, you know, he was waiting to see what the lower courts rule, as the Supreme Court did not speak to this issue. So they'll be kind of pausing and waiting for lower courts to make announcements. However, I think this could be something we hear from President Trump tonight in his State of the Union address. Maybe he'll address this. So lots to talk about, but that's a nice short synopsis.
It's great to be with you, Shane and Dan, on the economy piece and try to size it for you. The refunds could total as much as $175 billion. That's an estimate from the University of Pennsylvania's budget model of how much revenue has been collected under the International Emergency Economic Powers Act since that statute was used in February. So that's a half a percentage point of GDP if it's all refunded. And, you know, the question on refunds is one of, I guess, as these lawsuits mount and more companies start to demand repayment for tariffs that they perceive as being illegal, will that put pressure on the administration, which can choose to make this easy or difficult, and especially with the midterms coming. So that's a pretty sizable boost to economic activity, a half a percentage point of GDP of refunds. The cost, however, is on the fiscal deficit projections. This puts a big hole that the government's not going to fill by cutting spending. So that effectively means more government bond issuance to make up for the shortfall, because that was previously counted as revenue. So wider budget deficit, but I guess the upside is that the economy will be slightly stronger. From the point of view of Fed policy, I think we can say that this limits the upward pressure on inflation, all else equal. Probably adds a little bit more of boost to household spending, which could clear the path for the Fed to cut interest rates a couple more times as we're penciling in for the second half of this year. So all in all, I'd say this is on balance pretty decent, for equity investors. If you're a bond investor, you may have to be a little bit concerned here with rates having fallen back to close to 4% on the 10-year. Any concern about the budget picture or the sustainability of government finances could put some weight on the back end.
Well, Kirk, Shane, as you both pointed out, it sounds like there are a lot of considerations and complexities involved here in the aftermath of Friday's Supreme Court ruling. So something here will, of course, continue to track. I do want to turn over to geopolitics for a few moments, as there has been an increased buildup of U.S. military assets in Europe and the Middle East. This as the U.S. is attempting to negotiate with Iran a nuclear policy. This has been ongoing. So where do negotiations stand today, Shane, and how could this all play out from here, being mindful of President Trump's, quote, deadline to Iran to ultimately reach some form of a deal?
Yeah, negotiations are scheduled to resume on Thursday in Switzerland between Iranian negotiators and envoys from the Trump administration. The Trump administration is absolutely, dialing up the pressure. One, with their buildup in the Middle East. I think there are now two aircraft carriers in the Middle East that would also be joined by a number of destroyers and every kind of airplane in the Navy's arsenal, as well as possibly submarines. So this is a very large contingent and buildup. I think it's the largest since, the Gulf War. So, it really is sending a message to Iran and saying, we are ready to strike if we do not reach a deal. And on that, the Iranians have conceded a little bit and are saying that they're seeing positive signs of developments, in these negotiations. So I think Thursday will be a very interesting day to follow. You mentioned the president's deadline, which he gave, I think, a 10 to 15 day window to reach a deal. I don't think they're close enough to reaching a deal at this moment, but they're inching forward. So we'll see how Thursday goes. But, I do think it's interesting to follow, to see if the markets, feel the pressure yet, and they may not. But with that, I'll toss it over to Kirk.
Yeah. So trying to think about what this means from an investing standpoint is, I think, the oil prices have moved higher, gold prices have moved higher on this increased risk of an escalation or an attack on Iran. The higher oil price puts a little bit of a dent in the administration's affordability agenda if this also turns into higher prices at the pump. And that's been something that the administration's been talking about, is lower gas prices. That's one area that they can point to that has been successful. So to the extent that there is an attack on Iran, I would think that the administration is looking for, kind of a quick victory as happened last fall. And that's reflected in our oil price forecasts, which are, over the next year below spot rates at the moment. So, as we think about the impact on oil prices, if this is a temporary escalation, then the impact on oil prices is likewise going to be temporary. But on gold, it's a bit of a different story because the concerns about geopolitical risk come together with the expectation for the Fed cutting rates and central banks shifting their ownership of gold holdings, so owning more gold, less of U.S. government bonds. Altogether, you know, this rise in gold, we think, is going to continue, not because of Iran per se, but just the broader geopolitical context. So our forecast on gold is seeing that price rise to 6,200 by September before settling back to 5,900 by the end of the year.
Well, it is interesting to hear about the potential impacts to the markets, precious metals, commodities, and Shane, as you pointed out, the negotiations appear to be very fluid at this point. So another topic we'll continue to monitor. Before we close out, I do want to spend a few moments as we're recording here on Tuesday, February 24th. Later this evening, Shane, President Trump, of course, will deliver his State of the Union address to a joint session of Congress, with, of course, critical midterm elections just months away at this point that will shape the composition of Congress. A lot seems to be at stake for President Trump. So I'm curious how that might all translate to the messaging of his address.
Well, I think Kurt struck the A word and affordability, and that will be a highlight for President Trump tonight. You know, he'll want to try and say that he has moved the needle on affordability. Mentioned, you know, upcoming soon that Americans will be getting tax refunds that are larger than expected because of the one big beautiful bill last night. However, you know, he may have to talk about tariffs given the Supreme Court's decision and how he believes that benefits Americans in the long term. Even though many Americans are skeptical of that and making it harder on them for the affordability front. You know, I do wonder if President Trump will kind of have some big announcement we're not thinking about, but I think largely he'll be kind of touching on a number of issues that we've seen him touch on before. He may take a victory lap with regards to the border. I think you'll see him talk about a number of these foreign policy issues and try and take some victory laps for securing deals between Israel and Hamas and a number of others. However, he may shy away from, you know, something like Ukraine and Russia's conflict not being resolved. He may seek to walk away from that, but we'll see what angle he takes tonight. But I think this is very important for him. You know, last year when he addressed Congress, it was about his vision for the second term and how they could move that ball forward. Now he's shifting to almost the second half of his term because, you know, with the elections coming up, you know, this is an important speech. If he can try and right the ship right now and, you know, get Republicans on better footing so they can retain the majority in both the House and Senate for the second half of his term. If this does not help them in that venue, you know, it's going to be very tough for him because he'll be faced with a divided government for the last 2 years of his term. So this kind of kicks off the election season to some extent. And, you know, we'll see what issues he hits up on tonight and in his mind hopefully put him on better and Republicans on better footing.
Yeah, that's exactly what we're going to be looking for this evening. There's been a narrative that I think Wall Street has followed on, which is, you know, coming into the midterms with the approval rating on a number of key issues, plus the job approval rating being, you know, well below break even for the president, and with the narrow majorities in Congress, that is an environment in which the administration would maybe try to run the economy hot. And there has been, I think, a great point, Shane, that you bring up is that the One Big Beautiful Bill does provide some early relief to taxpayers, depending on the type of income that you earn. And that will be an important force. But then if it's going to be difficult, not impossible, but maybe difficult to pass another reconciliation bill or to get legislation passed, given these narrow majorities and what you're seeing is some fracturing within Congress, then the question will be, what can the president do on the regulatory front that between now and November might be able to lift the Republicans' chances in the midterm elections? So that's important. That'll be a key signal for markets. And I think on the tariff piece, which you will definitely want to talk about with members of the Supreme Court present, is whether he, you know, will take a tough posture in stated remarks, because this is something that, you know, is really running through the veins of the president. But whether that ends up becoming policy. So our view is that the effective tariff rate for the U.S. goes down this year, partly because of the Supreme Court decision, but also because even as they try to rebuild the tariff wall, it's just kind of difficult to do so without that broad sweeping authority that the IEEPA statute allowed. So if we get some, you know, as we expect, some easing on the tariff front, that together with some of the other initiatives, maybe they can get some legislation across the line. That's not totally out of the realm of possibility. But this idea that the administration tries to run the economy hot was a real, you know, kind of bedrock assumption coming into this year. So what he has to say tonight about that is pretty important. So we'll be following that closely.
Well, it does sound like the president will have a lot of ground to cover this evening, and there will be a lot to digest. Though, Kurt, Shane, as always, a very productive and insightful conversation. Thank you for dropping by Market Moves here on Top of the Morning to spend some time with our listeners, our clients, bringing them up to speed on a range of topics. And I do look forward to picking back up with our conversation next month.
Enjoyed it very much.
Thank you, Dan. Have a good one.
Today we have been joined by Kurt Ryman, Head of Fixed Income Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office, as well as Shane Lieberman, Senior Governmental Affairs Advisor with Governmental Affairs U.S. I do want to point out a couple of related resources. Earlier, I did mention the website ubs.com/POTUS47. On that site, keep an eye out for updates, resources from the UBS Chief Investment Office as it relates to POTUS 47, and this again includes the recent February 20th update, Supreme Court rules IEEPA tariffs illegal. And then Shane Lieberman and his colleagues from the Governmental Affairs U.S. office here at UBS produced the Washington Weekly publication, which can be located up on ubs.com/Washington Weekly. From UBS Studios, I'm Dan Cassidy. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management Business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.
As a firm providing wealth management services to clients, UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG, member FINRA SIPC.